QSC, 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 this is Tom Fry, KSXQ, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday Net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 147.330 megahertz, a plus offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, which is good. Are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, hearing none there. The topic for the evening will be beacons and how you can use those to detect whether a band is open or not. Anyway, I will begin and call roster, and then we'll carry on after that. WB6CLZ, Mike, are you out there?
Tom does, this is WB6CLZ, and we're listening to a Canadian station on a 6-meter beacon right now. Back to net control.
You're going to ruin your whole report. No surprises. WB6CIN, Cindy, are you out there?
Good evening, Tom. This is WB6CIN.
Okay, Cindy, hey, thanks for being out there. How about KA6CIA, George?
Evening, Tom, KA6CIA.
George, glad to hear you out there this evening. How about KE6RJ, Harry? No, Harry. How about KE6QI, Nancy? How about AF6DJ, Guy from Rosemont? Nothing heard. How about KI6SKN, Chris? And nothing heard. KJ6HZS, Mike.
Then Tom, the net, no traffic, KJ6HZS.
Hey, Mike, glad to have you out there, and you're always out there. That's good. How about KJ6FIL, Mike in Redlands?
Good afternoon, all. KJ6FIL.
All right, Mike, glad to have you out there also just about every doggone time. KF6VH, Bob. And I've heard. How about KJ6KDL, Jim?
Roger. I'm at the speaker, and I can hear things. KJ6KDL.
Hey, Jim, and I know Rosemary's off the hill. I don't know if she ever got on Echolink, but we know she might be listening in out there, so we'll check her in also. How about W6GZI, Frank? Yeah, nothing heard. KI6IQA, Kelly.
Good evening to all. KI6IQA.
Hey, Kelly. Hey, thanks for checking in. Appreciate that. K6GVL, Ron in Green Valley.
Good evening, Tom and Lynette. This is Ron, Green Valley Lake, K6GVL.
Hey, Ron, coming in there good from Green Valley. Appreciate that. Audio is a little down, but that's okay. We heard you. 86PL, Harold.
Evening, 86PL.
Hey, Harold. Glad to have you out there again this evening. And KNOC, K6LCS, Clint in Tarupa Valley.
K6LCS with some fat shorts this evening. Good evening, Tom.
All right, Clint, glad to have you out there, and we missed you last week. W6AWL, Art. And nothing heard. How about W6JLM, Judith? Nothing heard. W6KMM, Ken. They're probably hanging out in the patio all together. How about KI6OHN? John, are you out there? And I heard KJ6DBU, Will. And nothing heard. KI6OHI, Yomar, are you out there? And nothing heard. KF6Q here on Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. All right, let's move on down the list here to, he's not on there usually in the evening, KI6MAM Bill in Landers. He's a morning guy there. How about K6YNW, Chris? No, Chris. How about W6KBC, Gary? Nothing heard. KD6LAN, I think, is still in Laughlin, but Bill, are you back yet? And nothing heard. How about K6HAL, Rudy? And nothing heard. WB6PBZ, Ray, are you out there? And nothing heard. See if we can get Adam out of his homework. KJ6BCK, Adam. And nothing heard. AE6CK, Victor, are you out there in Santa Fe Springs? And nothing heard. KE6VHM, Frank. And nothing heard. KA6ROD, Rod.
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
Hey, Rod, thanks for being out there. I almost thought my radio wasn't working. Okay. KJ6DBS, Leon, are you out there in Arrow Bear? Yeah, nothing heard. KB6LTY, Christy. And I heard AE6TV, Hans. And nothing heard. And we're going to give a courtesy check in here for K6EKX. I believe his name is Robert. If he's listening in out there in the scanner, you're checked in here. All righty, KJ6LJF, William. Nothing heard. How about K6TUX? Guy, are you out there? Yeah, nothing heard. NQ7RD, Rick in Corona. All righty, well, that's the list as I have it here. People that normally check in. Anybody else out there as a guest would like to check in? All right. Well, I know why it's quiet out there, Mike. By golly, it's beautiful weather. That's why. All righty. Well, let's see here. I think we'll get back to Mike here for a minute. WB6CLZ with the sunset activity and DX report. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Tom, good evening to everybody. This is WB6CLZ. Sorry I spilled the beans about beacons and boy, I get really excited when 6 meters is open. I just can't contain myself. Anyway, well, things aren't too good on HF right now. Space Weather is currently reporting a sunspot number of 16, which is down from 100 plus a couple of weeks ago, and we've got a solar flux of 87, and that's also down from 100 plus a couple of weeks ago. I guess all we can hope for right now is that the sun's going to kind of rotate around, and those sunspots are going to be back here for field day, and we're all going to have a whopping good time in a week or so. Anyway, that's about it as far as HF. The BHF contest was over the weekend, and again, I have totally inadequate antennas for VHF. But we played around a little bit, and using a ZS6BKW, which is an HF antenna going through the tuner on my K3 on 6 meters, we worked back into the East Coast, three or four stations in Canada, all through the western United States and a few stations in Oregon. And that's just kind of playing around and in between watering the yard and cleaning up, coming over to the radio and working stations on 6 meters. So that's about all I've got for you. And back over to net control.
Okay, Roger that. And you know what? I'm not really sure what was predicted the last sunspot activity. And I don't know if K6RBK, I'll just check with him real quick. Rob, are you out there? Okay, he could be in transit. He's driving up from Carlsbad this time of day. He's probably not back up here yet. Anybody else out there with any other DXing report or anything you'd like to share, please come back to Net Control. And you know what? I expected that because there isn't any. Well, that's bad, Mike, but you know what? As we've seen this before, I'm sure it'll pick back up. So that's all right. Well, let's see what we have out there for antenna shorts with K6LCS, Clint from Harupa Valley.
Well, on the satellite side of things, the question of the week for me is, hey, a field day was today, what satellites would you be working? And this year, AL-51 is not on top of my list with its strange deteriorating battery situation. I do have a list of satellites for you to think of programming in your machine. Break for a sec. The easy-to-work FM birds, AO-27, SO-50, and SO-67. That's 27, 50, and 67. And program the simplex voice for North America frequencies in there also for the ISS, just in case the astronauts have some spare time for us. For sideband birds, I've got a couple of suggestions for you. Satellites 7, 29, and 52. That's AO7. Yeah, I know. It was launched in 1974. It's 37 years old, but it is semi-operational and still being worked. So look up AO7, Fuji Oscar 29. The Japan Amateur Radio League, FO29, is operational. It'll be up for us for field day. And VU Oscar 52, VU, the Indian Oscar 52, will be up. So that's fast work for field day. That's the ones I'd have programmed in my machine. And that's all I've got for tonight, believe it or not. Tech Tuesday, Tom. This is K6LCS.
Okay, roger that. And Clint, quick question. Most of these satellites, if not all, don't they have actually also a beacon they transmit?
AO7 has a semi-operational beacon of one. Yes, the answer is yes. Frequencies, we won't go into that. I don't think anybody wants to copy that, but yes. 7 does, 29's beacon is semi-operational, and 52 is definitely operational.
Question. Okay, and we'll talk about the FM ones in a minute. Yeah, go ahead, Harold, with your question.
I wondered if the Chinese opened up their satellite for the U.S. to use, or if they haven't yet, if they might do it for field day, 86 field.
They have not published a North American schedule for us for the weekend. Just not a bird I promote. Amateur radio is not the primary use for it, and North America seems to get shunned on some of its scheduling. So, and the guys were at Dayton, made a presentation, but I haven't heard much about anything positive for us on the FM side. So watch their website and see if they turn it on for us for North America passes this coming weekend.
Yeah, KF6Q here, net control for Tech Tuesday. Every Tuesday, 1900 hours, conditions permitting. Well, that's cool. I guess sometimes when AO51 or whatever it would have to be reloaded, does it still transmit a beacon while it's going by? I've never really checked on that.
No, but you can listen to us try to reload programming on 435.15, 435.15. And if you hear telemetry on that, we're asking you don't key your mic. That means, well, the control operator is just trying to reload its software. We have a battery cell that is at 0.0 volts. And so almost every time 51 goes to an eclipse, when it's not in direct sunlight, it resets itself or drops its programming. So it needs to be reprogrammed several times during the week, if not more than that. So it's nothing that can be repaired.
Hey, Roger that. And just real quick there, how long ago was that put up, Clint, the AO51?
2006 launched from right here. No, excuse me, that was launched from Russia also. And it's been a marvelous public relations tool for ham radio. Now, don't forget, in July, we have SUSAT 2, which is formerly called ARISAT 1, ARISSAT1, hopefully going to be deployed. And deployed, now it's still formal, but it's going to be pushed out of the space station, hopefully during an extravehicular activity in July. If you misplaced your February QST magazine with the instructions on how to monitor ARISSAT1, it's on my website. The reprint is on my website for you at worksat.com. work-sat.com.
Okay, Roger that. Appreciate that, Clint. I'm just wondering if in the future they're going to change the way the computers are configured on those, the programming, but who knows. Possibly something that would kind of not have that happen, but we'll see what happens. So. Well, anyway, anybody else out there, any questions with satellites before we move ahead? Please come back. Hearing none. And, I guess if everybody was out there last night, the space station made a nice pass overhead. Always cool to kind of see that. Definitely unique. Definitely a lot different than a plane, that's for sure. So, pretty neat. Anyway, tonight we're going to talk about beacons, and we're not talking about the moving company. Mike, real quick, you were talking earlier about a beacon on 6 meter. You want to explain what is a beacon besides a moving van?
Hey, well, I'll explain it as best as I can. Technical name, radio propagation beacons, and what they're set up for is so guys can listen on specific frequencies and determine, you know, if propagation is good enough to actually go up to the calling frequency, which is where a lot of people hang out and monitor, kind of like a repeater here, but mostly done on sideband or CW, and see if they can make contacts with stations, DX stations. For instance, 6 meters today, Oregon and Pacific Northwest, lower parts of Canada, British Columbia were open. But basically, it's just a signal that types, usually they send CW. I don't believe there's any terrestrial beacons that send sideband or FM. They're usually all CW, but they're pretty slow. If you have a sideband or if you have a CW list there with the alphabet, you can usually copy it after two or three tries, even if you're slower than I am. I'm pretty slow. But yeah, basically for propagation to tell when the band is open and what's going on.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, I remember we were discussing some time back, and these beacons, by the way, are pretty much there for that. They're for, I guess it's a way to tell whether signals are capable of getting through. I know, like you're talking up there in Oregon, Pacific Northwest, you could be calling out there as an individual, calling CQ and going around through the band, and you don't know whether they're actually not hearing you because of conditions or there's just nobody there. So I think with that beacon, Mike, what we're saying is, and there's beacons everywhere, all over the place, for different bands, and that's a good thing to check, is, okay, let's say, well, Jim, I wonder if I could talk to anybody in Montana. If there's a beacon up there, at least you would know that propagation's open to Montana. If you're hearing that beacon, chances are they're going to hear you, you know, provided you're set up proper. And with that in mind, if then you don't hear anybody coming back to you from, say, Montana, there's probably nobody out there talking. So anyway, Mike, just real quick, did you have a chance to look up any, I know there's some beacons up there by Tehachapi. Do you have any other good little goodies there or information about other beacons?
Just a, for instance, I was listening to Victor Alpha 7, Sierra India X-ray, I think that's him there now, on 50056.5, and that's up in Maple Leaf, British Columbia. That guy was only running 10 watts, and he was a 5x7 up to a 5x9. Also, some interesting ones, you know, you can always use CHU, which is the time station on different frequencies, kind of like WWV. For propagation. But another interesting one, and they're kind of close to us, so it really doesn't do us a lot of good, is NorCal DX Foundation. They're on 20, 17, 15 meters, 12 meters, and 10 meters. And they're kind of unique. The first dash on their identifier is 100 watts. Then it drops down on the next one to 10 watts, then 1 watt, and then a tenth of a watt. So it gives you a variation with power, so you kind of know what they're doing. And I'm not sure, I'm sure there's other ones like that, yeah, there's all kinds of them throughout. I mean, if you have internet access, just type in amateur radio beacons and even the band you want, and you'll get a myriad of them. Another one that was kind of interesting to me, if I can find it on my list here, was there's a couple of different websites where it's got worldwide beacons. And that's kind of interesting, too, because it's got all of the beacons for all of the frequencies. Well, maybe not all of them, but all of the common beacons for all of the frequencies worldwide. Back to that control. It's WV6CLZ.
Oh, roger that. KF6Q here. So that one that or that group that you say transmits at 100 watts, and that's always at the beginning, and then starts cutting power by one-tenth each time, which I guess that would be dropping, let's see, what would that be, 10 dB, I would believe. Anyway, as it drops each time, then let's say you're hearing it at 100 watts and you're hearing it at 10 watts, but at 1 watt, it goes away. So that would kind of tell us something, what that basically, at least if I've got 10 watts, there's a good chance that somebody out there will hear me. Is that the reasoning there, Mike?
I'm kind of a QRP guy, which means I like to run low power. I get the thrill of working somebody around the world with 5 watts or 2 watts, or if I have to, up to 10 watts. I do use 100 watts now and then. But, yeah, basically what that's good for is QRPers. They know, you know, that if you're hearing the guy with a tenth of a watt, then your 2 watts or 5 watts is going to be pretty effective.
Okay, roger that. Well, that's good news. And good to know. And when you say there's different frequencies, well, essentially, if we're hearing a beacon, let's say on 6 meters, the 6 meter band, and say there's another beacon in Ohio, well, let's not stretch it. Okay, let's say Montana. There's another beacon over there. And the one in Montana, let's say I'm getting him at an S5. Well, that tells me a lot of stuff. That basically, that's pretty strong. Number two, chances are very high, even if I'm not QRP, that I'm going to be able to reach out there. And with that said, even if that frequency, maybe I'm on a different frequency, you're not going to transmit on the same frequency as the beacon. Beacon is just to pick up this information. And then you'll be on another frequency, you're just trying to reach somebody, and then working around there. So, well, that's pretty cool. As I know that WO6B was saying earlier that he was hearing some people in there real strong. I think he said a 5.9 report from him. Vertical antenna and only running, I think he said he's running 10 watts? No, 25 watts. And that was from Montana or maybe the Northwest, like what you're talking. Back to you, Mike.
Tom, it was open kind of towards the northwest for quite a while today, at least several hours. KF6Q, WB6CLZ for Tech Tuesday. And doing pretty well. I was getting signal reports similar to that. I was running a little more power. I was running about 75 watts. But I was getting all really good signals. Now the band's kind of dropped out, but I'm still hearing CW signals on the lower end, at least an S3 to an S5.
Yeah, roger that. And, that's one thing. It's good to have an omnidirectional antenna of sorts, unless you're going to swing if you have a beam or a Yagi, you're swinging that thing around. But I know with the Omni, you could probably, let's just say a scenario here, Mike. I'm listening out there on a beacon frequency and going through these, of course, with my omnidirectional antenna. And first off, I don't have to worry about rotating it, number one. Number two, I hear the identifier there, and you say that comes across in Morse code. What would you say, 5 words a minute, 10 words a minute, as a guess?
Feels like about 10 words a minute to me. Anybody that's out there trying to learn Morse code, too, that's a good way to kind of listen to beacons. It's a good way to pick up numbers and letters here and there and grid squares. A lot of times they'll give their grid square. But, yeah, I think it's about 10 words a minute.
Okay, roger. And everybody out there listening, if you're not sure what that would mean, when you hear the K6BB repeater, do its little Morse code thing, that's ballpark, I've seen it somewhere around 30 to 35 words a minute, which is very fast, to say the least. I would say an average speed of people out there sending code would be, more like 15, Mike? Something like that?
About 15 is comfortable for most people. Naturally, they're a lot slower, and up to 30 and a lot higher than that, too. So, yeah, 15 would be a good average speed for a QSO.
And I think we've talked about this before, and I think ACS is kind of interested in that. And I know Chris is, wherever he's at out there. He's got himself a new key, so I know he's now looking in that direction, even more serious. But basically, there's a lot of people out there on certain bands, certain frequency areas of the band that are right around 5 words a minute. Is that correct?
Yes, there's frequencies that are just specifically for technicians on the HF bands. And there are some people that are really slow, but sending some really good code, too. So, if you wanted to take a listen down on those frequencies, that's a good place to start learning.
Yeah, roger that. And I know there are different ways out there to cheat. Okay, and I say that only in quotation marks. It's not really cheating. But I know that if you actually wanted to hear somebody on code and you did not know, there are software programs that will basically pick it up from the mic input of your PC or your laptop, and it will translate the code for you. However, that could be a learning tool, too, if you think you're getting stumped. And you never know. Possibly that audio-video feedback through your eyes is just another way of training. But I don't know. It could also develop to be a crutch. What are your thoughts there, Mike?
Ideally, copy it in your head is the way to go. I still have to write down at higher speeds, but copy it in your head is the best way to grow your speed. But yeah, that is a good idea. Cindy was learning a while back, and she was doing the audio-visual method, and the audio and visual, where she was looking at it and also hearing it, and she picked up some letters. But copying in your head is ideal.
Yeah, Roger. That I tried to learn. Oh my gosh, a million years ago. Rather difficult trying to visualize a chart in your head. And this was one of the methods years ago. But I think the best now is to memorize the sound. If I say A, everybody out there knows that's A, like the letter A. Or I'm abbreviating A, like Fonzie. But anyway, A. And if you hear the did-da, sound of Morse code, you just hear that as a group, did-da, and then nothing. And you learn that specific combination of did-da is an A, or dotted, which is N, and you start learning these different things by their sound. So that way, you're not mentally following any chart. You're not trying to trace anything out off a list. You hear it as the sound, and from what I understand, that's probably the best, easiest, and probably the best way to go to a faster speed. Any comments there, Mike, and then we'll ask for questions out there.
I've been practicing quite a bit, and when I get up near 20 words a minute and over, what you're hearing actually then is words. And basically, if you're musical at all, you hear the rhythm, and you kind of know that that's that word. And when you get there and can really copy words instead of letters, that's when you're getting to where it's really enjoyable to work CW.
Yeah, Roger that. And you know what? You don't have to do 15, 20 words a minute to have fun on Morse code. You can do 5. You can do 10 and still have a lot of fun out there. And just over a period of time, chances are you're going to naturally progress a little bit to be able to copy. Sending, I guess, is a lot easier because you know what you're doing and you know what's going out. Copying is you have no idea what's the next element, the next letter or whatever, number. So it's a little bit harder. That's, I probably would say, the hardest part. But as you go through that, it could still be a lot of fun. And then you've got a whole new frontier, a whole group of frequencies out there. Any questions out there or comments? Just talking a little about propagation and beacons and a little bit of Morse code, how the beacon sent it out, and stuff like that. Any questions, please come back to KSXQ.
KA6ROD.
KA6ROD, a CW guy at heart. Go ahead, Rod.
Oh, God, sorry, I'm catching my breath from running up the stairs. That's how old I am. Another good learning tool for the CW is W1AW. They transmit all kinds of tests, practice CW, starting at 5 words a minute. And I think if they still do it, they used to start off with the name, the page number, and the QST issue that they were using to send. But it's a great tool. And also, there's a club that I belong to, but I can't remember the name. It's a straight key club. Here it is, called Straight Key Sentry Club, SKCC, where people just use straight Morse code keys. So normally it's slower. And that's always a good way to start, too. KA6ROD.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. And Rod, are you on all the bands usually, or is that one of the reasons you were asking me about that vertical?
No, the reason I was asking about 80 is because of the net that's up here, but I'm on all the other bands, obviously, only.
Okay, Roger that. Well, that's good to know there. Straight key. Ah, there goes a whole other topic in itself, straight key versus a paddle. I know there are a lot of people out there that will testify to the fact, and these are usually paddle users, that start right out with a paddle, you're going to end up there anyway, and then you don't have to relearn as you progress. However, I think there's a lot of people that also would be happy with a key. And even if it's going to have a limit or, let's say, an invisible ceiling there, that's okay. Any comments out there from anybody on a paddle versus key, which is kind of a weird question for a 2-meter repeater net, but anyway, go ahead. Come back. Please come back to KF6Q.
How's that? I'll make a quick comment.
I'll go right ahead.
Generally have both on the desk. I generally have my little red ham key paddle, and then I generally have an old brass key down here in the flatlands, and up there I use an old J38 military key, which is one of the best feeling little keys that you can get a hold of.
Hey, Mike, and just from your experience and what you've done, say, over all these years, did you start out with a straight key and then work to a paddle? And if you did you have any difficulty making that transition?
I've always used a straight key, even back when I was a novice way back in the 60s. I've always used a straight key. It's just probably been within the last, oh, gosh, 2 or 3, 4 years that I've inherited paddles and fancier type keys. I've always been a straight key guy. Practice to get to use that paddle. But it sure is a lot more comfortable, and you can send a little bit faster, and it's a little less hard on your wrists, I guess is the way I would say it.
Okay, Roger that. So actually, as you're kind of might get that little carpal tunnel thing going there with the little key going up and down, and yeah, I guess you could get a cramp in your wrist. Well, that would really mess things up. And let's see, with the paddle, though, you're just kind of just barely touching that back and forth. Now, a paddle, for a lot of people out there who don't understand the difference, Mike, you want to explain? I think we've all seen a key, Bonanza, any of the old Westerns or the old guys that were telegraphing for the marshal to come. What does a paddle look like, and how do you operate it?
Well, a paddle looks like a paddle. I don't know any other way to describe it. Basically, just two little kind of circle-ish type paddles. And on mine, the way I have it set up, the dots are made with your thumb. As you touch the thumb, makes the dots. And as you touch your index finger, makes your dashes. And then there's also bugs, which is another whole different animal. But those electronically make your dots and dashes for you, and it makes it a lot easier. And it sends nearly perfect code if you can get the spacing right.
Okay, so basic key, I'm tapping it out, just pressing down on it, springs back up and just kind of clackety-clack. But what you're talking about is a little vein that sticks straight out horizontal, and there's a little contacts on either side so that when you push it one way, it does one thing, and push it the other way, it does the other. Now, are they always the same? Is it always dash to one side and dots to the other, or is that do they change that? I would hope they not. They don't change that, but anything is possible.
Boy, you're going to open a can of worms there, Tom. Yeah, that's a big controversy. There are a lot of people that like to use their index finger to make your dots and their thumb to make the dashes. And then there's left-handed people and right-handed people. And it goes on from there. I would say personal preference. But you can change that either by switching the wires, or most rigs you can just switch it using the program's internal program of your radio.
Okay, and the side-to-side motion, I'm going to say that it's just slightly spring-loaded and doesn't move very far. Is that correct?
Adjustable spring-loaded and adjustable distance. So, you can kind of adjust it for your own speed and for your own feel. Mine, I like them really tight and a real light spring. But as I'm getting older and kind of losing the, you know, the sensitivity in my fingers, I've kind of loosened it up a bit and kind of, you know, put the spring down a little bit on the bug.
Okay, now I don't even know what I have, like two I know of here. Three, I think I got one from Mark, W6MRKA, and I got two of these, the old Radio Shack key. I don't think they even sell those anymore. I'm not sure. Sad if they don't, but I can understand that. The paddle, how many, what are we talking about here in dollars? And I'm not talking about Dallas, Texas.
I think retail, you can get a paddle for probably in the $100 or less range at the low end, and gosh, up to probably $1,000 or more on the high end, you know, with the brass plated and the gold contacts and all the fancy stuff. As far as a straight key, I don't know, I think you could probably pick one up on eBay for $10 or so, and then they go up from there to the really, really nice ones, probably a couple hundred or maybe even more.
Okay, roger that. So essentially, if I wanted to start out and I didn't have the keys I got right now, I'm looking at maybe $10 or plus or minus a little bit, or get really lucky at a yard sale, I guess. And for $10 there, I'm kind of got a good start. Now, do most HF radios in general, and I know this is kind of a wide open question there, do most HF radios have input for a key? I mean, I'm pretty sure that they do, but just for all the listeners out there, what's your knowledge on that?
I'm trying to think here. I can't think of an HF radio that doesn't have an input for a key. I think that's just almost a required thing for an HF radio. And going the other way with that, some of the older rigs, you know, some of the boat anchors and that are made specifically for CW, and some of the little QRP rigs that are really inexpensive, QRP transceivers, low power stuff, that's all they do is CW, and you can pick those up very reasonably.
Okay, roger that. I know years ago, in my younger days, I think a little code practice oscillator, real little simple oscillator with an audio transformer feedback and a one transistor little thing, and I think the whole thing only had about maybe a handful of parts of that and a small hand, and plus that key, and you know, at least you can practice, you know, you're sending code to yourself, but you can practice. But taking that and actually using that to modulate a carrier, whether it be a very QRP, low power, a lot of circuits out there for that too. You know, so you can really, of course, I guess you have to listen. So you better make sure you be sending to everybody and got to get something to listen to who's talking back to you there. So, but anyway, it doesn't take much to set up to practice. Of course, if you have a computer, there's a lot of stuff there too, just like anything else. But if you were to start all over again, and well, let's say, how did you start? How did you learn? What was your learning curve, practice, method, all or none of the above?
I started out with an old tube-type code practice oscillator and the J38 military key that I got from the Army-Navy store in downtown Anaheim, and I probably paid 50 cents for it. A guy in the Fullerton Radio Club gave me the code practice oscillator. He said, here, just take this and play with it, and shocked the heck out of myself a few times because it was hot across the keys, like the old transmitters were. But that's basically where I started. It took a long time to get up to 5 words a minute, and a long time when you're a 14-year-old kid is probably 6 months. but then you reach a plateau about 10 words a minute, and it takes a little while to get through that. But once you get up above 10 words a minute and actually know the code, and you know it is what it is when you hear it, the letters and numbers, then the more you practice, the quicker it goes, and it goes pretty there. I wish Lanny or Bob BT or WA6MQF Bob we're listening on here, because those are the real CW guys. They can really give you some tips and some ideas and some stories. You know, most of my work is sideband, but I do like to play CW now and then. It kind of keeps the old brain aligned, I guess. Back to you, Tom. WB6CLZ.
KF6Q on Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours. Conditions permitting. Well, Mike, yeah, I know. We'd like to get those guys over here, but, you know, they're on CW. That's why. And that's not why they're not here, I guess. The Army-Navy store. Well, I've seen a few surplus stores around. I guess it would be pretty much because you're going way back when you found that. I would say the guesses are that you're probably not going to find one there today.
Tom, I don't know if you turn it over to me. I've got interference here from probably that station in Mexico, but are you copying me?
Yeah, roger that. I got a copy, and yes, I did.
I caught some of that. Yeah, that was, I think, in 1960 or 61 I picked that thing up. So it's been a while. I looked in a surplus store down in San Diego a few months back, and, yeah, I don't think you're going to find a telegraph key in a surplus store. You know, eBay is the way to go. Let's see, what's the other one? QRZ. There's, you know, any one of those outlets is probably the best way to go if you're looking for a pre-owned key.
Okay, roger that, and good chance, too. What is it, the 40-meter swap net they have? I know it's on Saturday, but it might be on Friday also. Not sure of the hours. There's a good spot, too, I imagine, if you got to have a general class license to get out there. But you can listen, I guess, and then try to get a hold of somebody. Yeah, I guess, things have changed, and I know that even though they've dropped the code requirement some time ago, it, from what I've read, it's actually picked up more interest. Now that it's not required, it's something we want to do because we're not being made to. Is that human, that's the human intellect, correct?
Yeah, QSL. Tom, you probably better not send it over to me because I'm getting interference from that station in Tijuana, so I'm not really hearing you all the time, so I'll just listen for a while. It's WB6CLZ.
Okay, Mike. Well, we're going to be closing down here in a bit anyway. It's almost 10 minutes to 8. If you do copy this, Mike, we need to get you a Yagi down there pointed up this way, or maybe you do. I don't know. Sometimes you use that Omni, and possibly a good Yagi to keep those guys out of there. So who knows? yeah, it's that time of year. Possibly it's propagation. As you said, we 6 meters open and 2 meters getting more open to Mexico. So. Anyway, we're going to probably close down here in a bit, and if anybody else out there would like to make any comments about keys, Morse code, beacons, getting out there and experimenting on the HF band, please come back to KF6Q. Hey, Harold, go ahead.
One quick comment. If you hear something and you catch a call sign and it's on a band that you're not allowed to work, but you want to contact a person, just go on QRZ and pick up their mailing address, drop them a postcard, 86PO.
You know, that's a good idea. They're an excellent idea because the guy might be working the extra band and you're a general class and you really don't want to get out there and get out of your territory, get yourself in trouble. But anyway, yeah, that's a good idea. You can always send them something. A lot of times, too, some of these guys you'll hear out there actually have their own website, so that's pretty neat, too. Fantastic. Good suggestion there, Harold. Anybody else out there? Anything in closing, please come back to KF6Q.
One head on there.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Just an add-on. You stand a better chance of getting an answer back if you send them a self-address prepaid envelope. Take a stamp on there and fold it up, put it in with your query, and they usually will answer you a lot more quickly than they will if they have to dig up an envelope, address it to you, go find a stamp and mail it to you, or you can have them, you know, send an email or whatever, but to get an email address on QRZ, you have to be a member and you have to log in. But you can still get the mailing address, so you can give that a shot, 86PO.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. It's similar with QSL cards. I think it's the same thing. You know, if you want somebody to send one back to you, same way, self-addressed stomped envelope, as they say. Anyway, well, that's good. Yeah, SASE, they used to call it. Anybody else out there? Any comments or questions or suggestions? Please come back.
KJ6KDL.
Hey, Jim. KJ6KDL, go ahead.
This is for those space station watchers. Last night I heard some guys talking about the International Space Station flying over last night. And so I checked, and they mentioned it was flying over tonight. It is tonight at 9:14 p.m. Those who are interested in looking in the San Bernardino Valley area, 9:14, it'll pick up at west-southwest about 10 degrees. It'll be in the air about 6 minutes, peaking at 41 degrees. And drop at 11 degrees north-northeast, for those who are interested. KJ6KDL.
Okay, Jim, yeah, appreciate that. Good information. And I know Chris, KI6SKN, has been very nice to announce a lot of that out there, excuse me, when it's going over. So good for him out there on that. So, all right, maybe we'll all get out there and take a look at that. Anybody else out there? Any comments, questions, or suggestions? Please come back.
A question for KDL, please, K6LCS.
Go ahead. I'll just turn it over to you two.
KDL, was your source for that NASA? Because the Russians have repositioned the ISS twice in the last 7 days, causing between a 70-second to 4-minute deviation in most of our Keplerian data. So the times you gave us, was that straight from NASA?
Roger, that was from spaceflight.nasa.gov/real data, and there's a sighting section. I just picked Apple Valley, and it gave me the times for today, but it was about 4 days old. It went back about 4 days, so it may be a few minutes off, but it should be there.
Okay, and for those of you who do monitor the ISS, you update your KEPs every few days now as soon as you can because of those repositionings. And, yeah, if you're a minute or two off, it just gives you another minute or two to adjust to the darkness, but it'll be the second brightest thing in the sky after the moon. It's horribly exciting. Okay, I'll hear you guys up there at 9:14 this evening. K6LCS. Thank you, KDL. Thank you, Tech Tuesday Tom.
Okay, Roger that. That sounds pretty neat. Doggone Rooskies. Well, no, I'm not going to go there. Non-political statement. They're nice guys. They're up there taking care of our space station, all of our space station. Anyway, anybody else out there, any questions, comments, or suggestions, please come back to KSXQ.
I'm hearing you, and I got a quick comment.
Go ahead, Mike.
WB6CLZ, I just want to, if anybody has 6-meter sideband equipment, 6 meters is still open. I'm here in the N0LL beacon in Kansas, and also on 6 meters about 5130, I think it was, Victor Alpha 7 Foxtrot Charlie in British Columbia. So 6 is hopping tonight if you got the equipment. Back to you, Tom. Good net tonight. KF62 and Tech Tuesday, WB6CLZ.
And KF6Q here, Tech Tuesday, on the Big Beer Amateur Radio Club repeater. Anyway, got a phone call here. Going to run here pretty quick. So, anyway, let's see here. I think that pretty much wraps it up. QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net, closing the net at 1,954 minutes. Appreciate everybody out there participating, listening in, and hey, it's always great to have you guys out there listening and coming back. And we'll talk to you again next week. Check back in on Tech Tuesday. It's KF6Q, returning the repeaters to normal use.